here is a quick reminder of what we were discussing last time. The technology is the category of matrix factorizations, in particular, Kazul-type matrix factorizations, where you have the two polynomials and the differential shoots both ways so that it squares to their product. And the second tool, just a moment. Why wouldn't this work? The second tool is a two category associated to symplectic varieties, in particular to cotangent bundles. An object consists of auxiliary variables and a superpotential, which depends on both basic and auxiliary variables. This also works equivariantly if there is a group G acting on X. It must also act on auxiliary variables, and the superpotential should be invariant. And the category of morphisms between two such objects is matrix factorizations over the base, the auxiliary variables, and of the difference of superpotentials. The trick is that when you tensor multiply matrix factorizations, then superpotentials add up. That's why this works. So as I mentioned last time, this category is presumably equivalent to the two category which derived algebraic geometers associate to the base variety X. Namely, you consider the category of coherent sheaves over X together with tensor product. So this becomes a monoidal category, and you may consider two category of its object, of its representations. I think that an important technical advantage of this symplectic construction is that we can accommodate the situation where you have to impose stability condition before you take the quotient by the group. T star X tab is no longer a cotangent bundle. You remove a closed subset from it. So how do you accommodate the two category? Consider an object, Z and X, and there is an obvious map from this to the cotangent bundle of X, which is done with the help of partial derivatives of W with respect to the coordinates of X, which sends you to the fiber. And just define the preimage of this map in Z cross X. Call it Z cross X stable. So a point here goes to the cotangent bundle, and you make sure that it lands in the stable subset. And then you can define the stable version of this triple product by imposing both stability conditions. And you set the category of morphisms to be matrix factorizations only on the stable part. And by the way, it would be sufficient or equivalent to impose stability only on one pair, because stability conditions match on the critical locus of the superpotential, and the category exists in its formal neighborhood. So if two open conditions match, then on the critical locus, it's sufficient to impose just one of them. This helps. So now we move directly to representations, to categorical representations of braids. So if you used the derived algebraic geometry approach, then imposing stability would be hard, because the stability condition usually involves both the base and the fiber of the cotangent bundle. And in the derived version, you trade by some Kazul duality, you trade the cotangent spaces for odd tangent spaces. And then it's not clear how to impose the stability. That's one of the reasons why we prefer this approach. Sorry. Okay. So now, as our symplectic variety, we take what's known as the commuting variety. This is a Nakajima quiver variety corresponding to this single loop. So by definition, you take endomorphisms of CN, which would be GLN. Take the cotangent bundle, because this green loop involves arrows going both ways, and do the Hamiltonian reduction with respect to the conjugation adjoint action of GLN. So set theoretically, this means that you consider pairs of square matrices, GLN Lie algebra, with the condition that they commute, and then you take the quotient by the adjoint action of GLN. And this is a bad variety. It's a at least it's a complicated variety, not smooth. Commutation condition is not good. But for us, it doesn't matter, because we will not work directly with the variety, especially not defined this way. So for us, this is a perfect simple example. We have two actions of C star, essentially scaling X and Y. So Q scales them simultaneously in opposite directions, and T scales only Y. Now we bring in a special object to the two category, which looks complicated, and so I will have to motivate it later. So that object, I call it FL hat, just to give it a name, is related to flag varieties. So here I remind, let's recall quickly the properties of the flag variety and its cotangent bundle. The cotangent bundle is simply pairs of a flag and a nilpotent matrix, which preserves the flag in a nilpotent way. So it sends every subspace to its next subspace, which sits inside it. And there is a famous map from cotangent bundle to the nilpotent cone, which strips off this matrix, which takes this matrix Y. It's the Springer resolution. The object that we use for the two category is the cotangent bundle, and the superpotential is the pairing of the map mu with the matrix which lives in the base space, meaning this GLN. By the way, there is a C star T action on the cotangent bundle, which scales matrix Y. What is this object geometrically? So it defines a Lagrangian with a vibration over it. The object consists of pairs of matrices XY. Now the matrix Y has to be nilpotent. You consider a Lagrangian subvariety of the commuting variety, in which you impose by imposing condition that the matrix Y is nilpotent. It's really a strange condition unless you derive it from the cotangent bundle to the flag variety in this way. Because naively, you would think that you should just set Y equal to zero. And the fiber over this Lagrangian is flags which preserve both X and Y. So this is a flag commuting variety restricted to Y's being nilpotent. If you simply say this, it looks very artificial. Now, the endomorphisms of this object, again, naively geometrically, would be taking the product of two such Lagrangian objects over the common base.
Sorry, is L the critical locus of the superpotential? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, well, you have to impose criticality with respect to auxiliary variables and set y of the commuting variety to be equal to the derivative over x. So it will be equal to that y. So here I abuse notation. Both y's are equal.
And what's the curly L?
Sorry? Curly L is the fibration. So straight L is, say, impose the condition that matrix Y is nilpotent in the commuting variety. And curly L means put flags over it. And if you want endomorphisms, you have to put two flags over it. And now this is beyond repair. This is a very bad variety. So you should not try. I tried and originally it's no good at all. But the correct category of endomorphisms of this object is matrix factorizations, GLN equivariant, so base, both sets of auxiliary variables, and the difference of superpotentials. This looks very smooth, but pretty big. But it can be simplified with the help of Knorr and similar tricks. So so first of all, and there are several ways to simplify it. So first of all, observe that the superpotential is linear in the matrix X, the coordinate on the base, and it's totally unrestricted. So you can trade this matrix X for an odd matrix by Kozul, and the superpotential will become a differential. So you'll be imposing a condition that both, by the way, this mu is a moment map. Again, there is a big coincidence. The auxiliary variables appear to come as a symplectic variety. It didn't have to be this way. It gives you a hint that the whole story comes from a three category. So you simply remove the matrix X and impose the condition that mu1 is equal to mu2, and you end up with the so-called equivariant Steinberg variety, which is a nilpotent matrix and two flags that preserve it. And you take the quotient by GLN. So it's something good rather than the awful double flag commuting variety. The second way of simplifying it is to use Knorr on X paired, sorry. First of all, let us, to make things simple, let's use the GLN equivariance to put the first flag in the standard position. So now we have only one flag and GLN becomes Borel. And this N, the nilpotent radical, represents nilpotent matrices respecting the standard flag. So these are just strictly upper triangular matrices, the n small thing. Now look at this X paired with this strictly upper triangular matrix. This is the case for Knorr periodicity because they come quadratically. So you can remove this n altogether, and with it will go the lower triangular part of the matrix X. So the matrix X becomes Borel. So now you have Borel subalgebra and the cotangent bundle to flags, and the superpotential is Borel matrix paired with the moment map coming from T star L. So in a very pedestrian way, you have two Borel equivariants, the second one coming from presenting flag as the quotient of GLN. So now flag becomes a GLN matrix. Its fiber is nilpotent. The base matrix is Borel. And the superpotential is as simple as it gets. So this is very accessible. Now, Bezrukhovnikov and Risch constructed a homomorphism from the affine braid group into the derived category of coherent sheaves over the Steinberg variety. The word derived Steinberg variety has to show up when they define the convolution. So this is more technical than this category is more technical than you might think, because again, they trade matrix X for odd variables. So they turn an affine braid into a complex of coherent sheaves, and thus they achieve categorification of the affine Hecke algebra, which is a K group of this category. Since this is equivalent to our category, we just have for free a homomorphism from affine braids into the endomorphisms of this object FL hat. And let me show what it is explicitly. Again, it's accessible in the second simplification. So this is the base matrix X, which is now upper triangular, the nilpotent matrix of the cotangent bundle to flags, and the matrix G, which describes the position of the second flag. Now, the superpotential factors into three factors. This is a very good sign. The matrix Y, the matrix element of G, which tells you that the flag is non-standard. So if this G21 is zero, then the flag is standard. The whole matrix is just a relevant Borel. So this tells you that you have a non-standard flag, it's rotated, and some extra factor, which I call X tilde for brevity. So if you have your superpotential as a product of three, there are three matrix factorization, Kazul matrix factorizations associated with it. This one has G21 as one of the differentials. So you may guess that it kills this G21, so it corresponds to the identity braid. The second flag is also in the standard position. The crossings correspond to killing X tilde, and there is a reason for this. Because setting this to zero means that the second flag swaps the eigenvalues of the matrix X somehow. So one could have guessed it. And the third matrix factorization corresponds to the Kajdan-Lustig object that corresponds to their special basis. So let me skip this. And the, no, it's called Bernstein-Lustig element. Sorry, that's Kajdan-Lustig. And this is called Bernstein-Lustig element, and a fine braid which takes ith strand and sends it around. By the way, this red one is just the hole in the annulus, which distinguishes affine braids from ordinary braids. It's one way to denote it. So this one corresponds to the identity braid tensored with a Borel character. So if a single strand goes around the hole, the affine hole, this is very easy. Just shift the weight of the Borel. Now, you may wonder, what about closing the braid? So if closing the braid in a circular way will produce a link, just send the strands around. And you may guess that if you take, say, endomorphisms between the identity braid and a non-trivial braid, you may get a link invariant. You will get a vector space. Maybe that vector space is a link invariant. Not quite. The problem is with the second mark of moves. I should have used plural because there are two of them. So the closures of two braids give you the same link, there is a non-trivial condition or move. You can take braid beta, add to it an extra strand, and put a single crossing on the right, positive or negative. So these are two different moves. And if you close, you will get the same as the closure of this one, because when you close the last strand, it creates a loop that you can unwind. So this is a very non-trivial move for this construction. It would be a miracle if you get the same space of morphisms out of these two braids, beta and say beta prime. And the miracle doesn't happen here. And by the way, topologists will tell you that, again, you have to try it with positive and negative, but you don't have to do the same on the left, because it will be derived from braid properties and the so-called first Markov move. First Markov move says that a closure of a composition of two braids does not depend on the order. It's the usual trace property, trace AB equals trace BA. Because you can move one braid around and it will appear from the bottom. And that property is usually very easy when you deal with monoidal categories. It just comes naturally. So it's good that you don't have to test Markov on the left. In this construction, it matters. So what we did with Alexei is with some motivation, we consider the Hilbert scheme of endpoints instead of the commuting variety. The difference is that now your base is not just GLN, but also CN, or homes from C to CN. I will refer to these elements as vectors or framing vectors. And then you do the same GLN reduction. But now you have to impose the stability condition to get the Hilbert scheme, which says that this vector V, when you apply to it matrices X and Y, should generate the whole CN. So there should not be invariant, non-trivial invariant subspaces in this representation, which contain.
Is there a modification anywhere in math of the affine braid action that gives you the invariance of links in S3 with a circle missing?
No.
Like that?
No, it's the framing comes from the removal of the framing means that you turn your taub nut into C cross C star. So it's elsewhere.
Yes.
So it's not the one.
Physically, that makes sense.
So I hope I'll comment in the end on where does this come from. And so in this case, the special object is the same. We ignore the presence of the framing vector. Just everything is the same. So the geometric meaning of this object now is this famous Lagrangian subvariety in the Hilbert scheme, which is matrices Y are nilpotent. It's singular, but here again it comes naturally from this definition by superpotential and flags hanging over it. So it's yes.
How is this variety related to like the core of the Hilbert scheme? You map it down to sim and like take like the pre-image of zero.
So you take the flag Hilbert scheme, which is a bad variety, projected down to flag Hilbert scheme is the same as Hilbert scheme, but with flags which respect the matrices X and Y, projected down to the Hilbert scheme and restricted to Y being nilpotent. And this is what this object is. It's a pretty bad object, but the category of endomorphisms in this way is a good one. It's what we had before. In addition, we have to add the vector and impose the stability condition. But you see, we never require any commutativity. So it's pretty good. And we may drop one of the two stability conditions because they match on the critical locus. Since the matrix X is involved in the stability conditions, we cannot trade it by Kozul duality for odd variables.
You can extend your matrix to this matrix stack, and there is a product.
True, but you will lose one of the Markovs.
Okay.
And yeah. So you will lose one of the Markovs, and I will illustrate. The stability condition is important. But what you get by dropping stability condition is still interesting topologically. It says something.
What I'm trying to say is that the category, state category, is some kind of nice subcategory in the set. It's okay. We can talk about it. Anyway,
I'll just say that at least it is interesting to consider what happens when you drop the stability condition. The framing is still there. Apparently, the answer in that's part of also what we're doing with Tudor and Justin and Nick and Alexei. It's somehow related to positivity of the braids. If braid is somehow positive in a certain sense, well, let me skip over this. So Kazul duality doesn't work, so you cannot get the right answer from the Steinberg right in this way. But the representation still works, so you can borrow the representation from the commuting variety and transfer it here. There is an obvious way to do it because the framing vector is not involved in the superpotential. And you just have to explain why the monoidal structure is preserved by this transfer, and this is related to the ability of dropping one of the stability conditions. So it's not hard. The result, so now some theorems associated with this. The resulting homomorphism from affine braids to our new category factors through ordinary braids. And this is easy to see because the stability vector must have a non-zero entry here. Otherwise, you won't generate the whole CN by X and Y, because X and Y are upper triangular. I'm cheating a little bit, but only a little bit. And if you have an entry, a non-zero entry here, it kills the Borel character responsible for the closest braid going around the hole, closest strand, because it's related to shifting this last weight. So that's why this factors for ordinary braids. Now let Vn be the defining representation of GLN, or perhaps it's dual. I'm a little bit unsure here, have to check. Consider the following, homes from the identity braid to our braid tensored with the sum of exterior powers of the defining representation of GLN. Since we're dealing with categories of almost coherent sheaves equivariant with respect to GLN, tensoring is allowed. So the theorem is that this is invariant with respect to the second Markov move. I'll try to show how this works on a simple example a little bit later. Therefore, this is a link, this space of Holmes is a link invariant of the link constructed by closing the braid beta. In other words, if you present the same link by closing a different braid, you will get the same vector space. Another theorem is that this homology, let's call it homology, is isomorphic to the Zergel bimodule-based homology. Should have said it's triply graded. So it has the action of C star Q. It has the action of C star T, which is also paired with homology, and the third grading is the degree of this exterior power. So it matches what we defined with Misha, and then Misha Kovanov defined with the help of Zergel bimodules, the standard Homfli DT link homology. And with some work, you see that this thus defined, this homology has an interesting symmetry of swapping X and Y, and this way swapping the X, the Q and T grading. Because the category, let me show you. Over here. That's without the framing vector, but it's good enough. You see, it has an obvious similarity between X and Y here. The only difference is that Y is nilpotent and X is Borel. So if you can remove somehow the diagonal of X, the category will have that symmetry by swapping X and Y. There are some technicalities associated to how X and Y behave under the monoidal structure, but this can be handled. And so you will get the symmetry of swapping T and Q grading in the knot homology, because in knot homology, the diagonal of X will more or less disappear.
Request, Lev?
Yes.
I don't understand the third grading very well. So,
sorry.
So the picture is good. 3D theory, 2D boundary condition, and lines, which form a copy of the.
Yes.
So, like from that picture, where does a third grading appear?
The third grading appears from a Wilson line, which goes through the center of the disk. So D two brains are arranged into a disk. They bound NS5s on the boundary, but then there is an extra Wilson line which originates. So let me just tell it quickly. This stack of D two brains resides over. So that's the what will be discussed in our paper with many authors. So we have a stack of D2 brains, which resides on top of the north pole of P1 in the result conifold. And the reduction from M to 2A goes by a U1 rotation, which rotates P1 and the O minus one fibers in a particular way, so that the fiber which in which these D2 reside over the North Pole is not rotated. So P1 is rotated. So any M2 that was wrapping P1 will become a string in the 2A. And the end point, so one point of that string will be attached to D6 appearing at the South Pole of P1. And the other end will be attached to the center of that disk-like stack of D2s, and will produce this Wilson line. So this Wilson line knows that you had a P1, and there were some M2s wrapping that P1. And that's the origin of the A grading. If you apply the same representation of affine braids to more general quiver, which corresponds to the moduli space of instantons, then you categorify, put here a star, because we didn't prove that the K theory of the category is equal to the cyclotomic AK algebra, but the relations that you get match the cyclotomic relations of the Hecke algebra. The equivariant parameters of this symmetry appear as the variables in the cyclotomic Hecke. So it's a rather easy exercise. If we replace this Wilson line, which supports the sum of exterior powers, by a Kazul complex, so we can use a differential here, which wedges with the framing vector, which lives in the same space. I mean, not the same, but it's a vector in Cn. So you act on it with powers of matrices X and Y. And this gives you a differential here. And you will still get a link invariant out of this homology. And presumably, it will be the SLMN homology.
One more question. Can this Does this uplift to something in the Deligne category?
Deligne is when you melt N out of GLN. Is that what you mean?
Yes, it's a category with the.
Yes, so yes. So what was happening here, the triply graded homology exactly matches the as far as I understand, that notion. Because all this happens on the conifold side. So you removed the N of S element. So if you want to bring it back in the theory, I call it N capital here, not to confuse with this N. This N is the number of strands in the braid. It has nothing to do with the group. So if you want to bring the Chern-Simons group, you have to add this differential. And you can accommodate even for supergroup. So this is a technical exercise for those who want to play with polynomials. How does Markov 2, for example, work on two strands? You can also try to compute
Going back to Kevin's question, I don't think you have like a variable Kevin. In that construction, there is no variable like
that.
There's no object for which the trace is kind of like N.
So first of all, there is no N. This N small is the number of strands. Number two, the homology. Well, let me say how this works with homology. Well, in addition to variables T and Q, which count T and Q grading, we'll have an extra variable A. Well, the homology, which is the Homfli PT polynomial, will depend on two variables, Q and A. And if you replace A with Q to the power N capital, then you get the homology of SLN. So variable A is Q to the N of SLN. So if you want to have the dimensions or some things like that, which should be polynomials in N of SLN. This is the Q version. So instead of N of SLN, you have Q to the N of SLN. And it appears as the variable A. So when you decategorify, you get a variable A, which is Q to the N of SLN. And indeed, so you see that indeed it becomes a variable. So again, this grading results in a variable when you go down from categorified to the ordinary link polynomial. And that variable is Q to the N of SLN. So it does show. Andrea, I'll be happy to explain it in more specifically. So the calculation for Markov 2, just consider a single crossing and close it. You will get an unknot drawn in a funny way if you take a single crossing and close both strands. How does the calculation work? So I remind you the general setup for two strands. So if you want to compute home from this to this, which will result in that unknot, you have to consider a Kozul matrix factorization on two lines. Oh, I forgot to put a minus, I'm sorry. So there should be a minus on one line so that they add up to zero. This one corresponds to the identity. You see G21 will be killed. And this one, the bottom one, corresponds to the crossing. That's where you kill X tilde, a long expression, which is up there. Now you do the row operations. So you will get zero here, zero here. You see that the top Kozul complex now eliminates G12. Since you close the braid, you forget about all the variables. You no longer care about the module structure. So G12 is simply set equal to zero. Then X tilde becomes G11 times X11 minus X22. So your matrix G is now strictly upper triangular since G21 is zero. So you can unwind it with the help of one of the two Borels. So now you're left with one Borel equivariance and no matrix G. So here you simply kill X11 minus X22. And what remains is this X11 equals X22 on the diagonal. And sorry, should have been plus. That's my error. X12 here, Y12, and the vector. And one Borel equivariance remains. Now you recall the stability condition, which tells you that V2 must be non-zero. So by using Borel, you can put this V in the standard position. What remains of Borel is C star of in the 1-1 position, which acts on both X12 and Y12. This, the remaining C star, they are not equal to zero simultaneously. That's the part of the stability condition. So you take the quotient, you get P1. So what's left is P1 and C, which supports the diagonal variable X. Let's ignore it for a moment. Now on this P1, you have the structure sheaf O0 and O minus one coming from, that's part of the exterior power of the second fundamental representation. Oh, sorry, of the fundamental representation of GL2. So this one will give you one-dimensional homology, and that's your Markov move. And this one will not give you anything because there is a desert between O0 and O minus two. So that's how one Markov move works. If you use the other crossing, then because of the weight in that Borel, this sum will be shifted by O minus one, and you will get O minus one and O minus two. So now this one will not give you anything, but this one becomes O minus two and gives you first homology, which is again one-dimensional space. So this is how two Markovs work, two Markov two work. And as you see, they rely, the second one relies on the stability, which will give you the homology in that P1. And this generalizes to n strands. Yes.
But it's a degree one. Why don't you get minus one?
Here?
Yeah.
I guess I should have used the dual to this. So if it's a dual, it will have the opposite. Wait, I should check. Okay, now some funny stuff. So there are two questions that you may ask after listening to this. So first of all, why such a strange object? Where does it come from? And question number two, why do you get link homology? Where are the links? So the comment on the first question is interesting, and it involves pictures that are similar to the pictures used by Kovanov-Lauda and Ben Webster in their categorification story, only the pictures that you will see here live one floor above. So we will discuss Lagrangian correspondences. Well, they show up here under the microscope. And the answer to the second question, why these categories and where are the links? This comes from M theory. So if I have time, I'll comment on that as well. So some observations before we go to the discussion of Lagrangian correspondences. A corollary of Knorr periodicity is that if your auxiliary coordinates involve coordinates A and B, which assemble into A times B in the superpotential, then you can simply throw them away. And moreover, if similar spirit, if there is some extra auxiliary coordinates and the superpotential is linear in them, then you can just take the quotient of Z by the coefficients and again throw this away. So the periodicity of matrix factorizations now lifts to isomorphisms between objects in the two categories. So Lagrangian correspondences, which are Lagrangian objects in the products of symplectic varieties, now become functors between associated two categories. So if you have an object in the product of these two, so it's auxiliary and the product of bases and a superpotential, then it determines a functor from one two category to the other. And on, at least on the surface, it's very easy to describe how does this functor act on an object. You combine the first base with the auxiliary and auxiliary into the big auxiliary. In other words, you declare the coordinates of x1 to be auxiliary, and you take the sum of superpotentials. Of course, that's not the full answer. I have to explain what happens to morphisms under this functor, but let me sweep this under the rug. Example, suppose your symplectic variety is contingent bundle to C. What would be the identity and the functor from this one to itself? Well, you need an auxiliary coordinate and multiplied by the difference between the base coordinates in two copies of C. So indeed, if you act on an object here, which has no auxiliary coordinates, just one superpotential, now you have to combine this x1 with A. So now you have two auxiliary coordinates and the sum of superpotentials. And by the Knorr, this A is killed together with the difference of X's. Essentially, you set this equal to zero. So you end up with W of X2. So this is a very simple manipulation, not a big deal. Application, a center of a category is one way to look at it is the category or a category of endomorphisms of the identity function. That's one way to define a center. So now you know the identity functor, take its endomorphism with itself. So you have two base variables, x1, x2, and now you have two auxiliary variables because you have two copies of f. So this is what you get, all the variables. And the difference of superpotentials, which looks very much like Knorr. So after you kill the differences, you end up with modules over two variables, which is the same as the contingent bundle to C. So that's the claim that the center of these two categories coherent sheaves over the symplectic variety. Example number two, the Legendre transform, which swaps X and Y in T star C. Actually, one goes to the opposite of the other, but let me swap that. The corresponding functor is simply no auxiliary variables, just the product of base coordinates. And now you can check that if you square this, apply it twice, W will become W of negative X. So this Legendre transform is an equivalence of the category and itself. It's an auto-equivalence. Application. Consider, for example, the commuting variety case with which we started, and apply. So in commuting variety, it's equivariant T star GLN. So you can do Legendre by swapping X and Y matrices. So what happens if you apply it to our weird contingent bundle of the flags? It's an easy calculation, again, with some cancellation. You will end up with a very similar object, which is a bundle over flag varieties. But now, instead of the fibers being nilpotent matrices respecting the flag, you will get all matrices respecting the flag. So in other words, nilpotent versus Borel. hanging over the flag. So that's your new object and a very similar superpotential. And the morphisms of the new one will give you the coherent sheaves over what's known as derived Grothendieck-Steinberg. So what's Grothendieck-Steinberg? It's similar to Steinberg, except that now your matrix at the base is any, not just nilpotent. And you put two flags which respect it. But now you really have to say derived, because there will be repeated conditions here. But here we get derived for free because it's a category of matrix factorizations. So Bezrukhovnikov and Risch observed that the affine braid group can be sent both into Steinberg and into Grothendieck-Steinberg. And for them, it was a complicated homological algebra result. It's by no means obvious. And the constructing one homomorphism from the other, again, is not straightforward. It's not just you simply add the diagonal entries. It's a more substantial rearrangement of what happens. But in this story, in the symplectic story, it's simply Legendre transform. You swap X and Y, and Steinberg becomes Grothendieck-Steinberg. Now, what's the origin of the object, the mathematical, I may say, origin of the object FL hat? What flags have to do with commuting variety or with Hilbert scheme or with instantons? So the answer is this. This is a picture similar, say, to one of Lauda. So the two-dimensional surface here is the surface of the spatial slice of the stack of D2s. So it's a space of a two-dimensional three-dimensional TQFT. And we have an interface. So on the left, you have a theory with the target commuting variety N1. On the right, it's commuting variety N2. And the interface should be described by auxiliary coordinates and the superpotential. So the nice way to do it is to introduce two arrows, home from N1 to N2 and home from N2 to N1. These are auxiliary, so the purple ones are auxiliary. And write the superpotential this x and that x. And it's so you go this way, or you go this way, and take the difference. Now you see that this arrangement is very similar to an edge in another Nakajima quiver, totally unrelated to the green quiver. So in this new Nakajima quiver, the circles are in fact the other Nakajima quiver. So the commuting variety sits inside a single circle here. And the edge is the Lagrangian correspondence. And when you do the composition of such correspondences, then what happens is that the second matrix X becomes an auxiliary variable since you compose through it. And it imposes the equality between the left moment map from the first edge and the right moment, sorry, the other way, the right moment map of the left edge and the left moment map of the right edge. So what in Nakajima was the part of the Hamiltonian reduction corresponding to the group sitting here. In this picture is the criticality with respect to matrix X, but the result is the same. So if you compose these correspondences between between commuting varieties, you will end up with the object FL, because you begin with a trivial object. This is just one point, the zero thing. So there is just one object here in the whole two category, and you apply correspondence, 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 and you end up with FL. This tells us in particular that the braid, so in the original paper, we have this boundary of the theory which supports the object FL hat. And there is a dot, a defect, whatever, point like which where the braiding happens. That's the original picture. But now if you bring a microscope to this, you see that a single boundary is four interfaces in this example. And the braiding is a defect which happens when two interfaces intersect. So what you should associate here locally, you may compute by composing correspondences around the around this area. And red dot would be an object in the category of the purple circle. So braid is local in this sense. So these interfaces correspond to NS5s, which transverse the stack of D2 brains. But this is not the only example. It seems that there is a natural way to describe correspondences between similar Nakajima quiver varieties in the language of auxiliary variables. So for example, if you want to relate to Grassmannians, so you can put Cartesian bundle of Grassmannian and Cartesian bundle of Grassmannian as targets for the D model separated by an interface, then these purple lines would give you, I think first I saw this, a tutor showed me this some years ago at Stony Brook. So I should give the quote. So you can relate them by these two arrows and declare the purple ones to be auxiliary. You identify the squares, gives you superpotential. So this way you have an interface between Cartesian bundle to Grassmannians. And if you want an interface between instanton moduli spaces, then you would need two purple arrows here. The reason why you have two is because the second one essentially goes around like this. I will show you in a moment why here you get one phi and here you have to use two phis and a natural superpotential. The general rule seems to be that if you have two quivers, you can relate them by this chainsaw or whatever you may call it of purple arrows and take the traces around the triangles. So this way you arrange a quiver out of a family of quivers. So it's a quiver in quiver, which corresponds to two stacks of NS5 and D5 brains, which are transverse to each other. So one stack gives you a Hanani-Witten type 3D model, and the other stack appears as interfaces in that model, which are described by these arrows. So this is the first step towards two categorification of GLN and GLN tilde, because if you decategorify these correspondences, I guess they will, or decategorify them twice, that will be what I think Nakajima pioneered in the action of, and other people say the action of GLN on the cohomologies of Grassmannians. Here it's raised two floors up to functors between two categories. The second step would be gluing of objects, but that's work in progress with Alexei. Another application of Legendre transform in this story is that if you consider this H, which is a part of flag variety object, as an object in the product of two categories, then you can apply Legendre transform to it, which will turn the original green loops into these sand loops, and these are new green loops. So this is how the new object will look like. So if you do this Legendre transform to some of the edges which compose the flag object, you will get something in between the nilpotent and Borel fiber over the flags. So in other words, you will get an object, you will get a variety, which it consists of pairs, a flag and a matrix. And at each stage, you impose either that Y of the flag subspace is the same flag space if you applied Legendre, or the smaller one, that's the initial. What does this correspond to? What? This corresponds to two types of fundamental representations that GLN or GLMN may have. This story refers to the whole family of GLMN theories. Again, SLMN, I'm talking about M and N capital, not the small n. The small n is the number of strands in the braid. If you think of GLN as part of that family, you can represent it either as GLN0 or as GL0N. So if you thought that your fundamental is even space, n-dimensional even space, then from this perspective, you realize that you could also present it as an odd space, or in fact, consider both, because when GLN0 becomes GL0N, they will be swapped. So now there is an HL operation of taking, say, exterior powers. But if you do exterior powers to your even one, that's the same as doing symmetric powers to the odd one. So what is exterior to the even becomes symmetric to the odd, and vice versa. If you work at the level of Chern-Simons theory, decategorified, then the difference between the even and odd is just an annoying sign mismatch, which happens if you work with Jones polynomial versus Kaufman bracket. You recognize that Kaufman bracket tells you that the invariant of the unknot is negative Q minus Q inverse. And this negative, you can remove it, but it's in a very unnatural way. So in fact, the Kaufman bracket is naturally designed for the odd version, whereas, say, Reshetic and Taraev is for even. There are two versions, but at the level of categorification, they behave differently. And so to accommodate them, you have to allow some braid strands to correspond to the usual edge. So the edge is a correspondence, so it's a braid strand. And some correspond to their Legendre transforms. And the reason why Legendre transform creates this will become obvious if we dive into string theory. So should I spend another 5-10 minutes talking about M, or should I just tell me? So a little bit about the motivation or explanation of the miracles. I mean, what do Hilbert schemes do with links and knots? We're not moving the points of the Hilbert scheme or the instantons around. That's not what the braid does. So the story is that there is an 11-dimensional M theory, which we place on a special 11-dimensional manifold of the following form. This is what Witten told us. Take a Cartesian bundle to a 3 manifold. That's where the topology will happen. And at least locally, can be presented as a Calabi-Yau somehow. A particularly interesting case when this is S3. Then take C2, which has the geometry of it Taub knot. So I draw it as two cigars. And 11th time, which is the Cabordism time. Now place in an M5 brains. These are six dimensional physical objects in the following way. So these will produce the Chern-Simons theory on M3. So they are wrapped on the zero section of T-star, on one or both cigars. So their distribution between cigars will tell us what is the superalgebra of Chern-Simons. So if you place them all on cigar Y, it will be the normal UN Chern-Simons, and they go along RT. Then to every knot or link component which sits in M3, take its conormal bundle, three dimensionals, Lagrangian here, take the X cigar if you want the usual story categorification, or again, you can place some on X cigars and some on Y cigars, and that will be the distinction between two types of the fundamental, and RT. So you see that superalgebra and two types of boxes is related to swapping X and Y. That's why Legendre. Now assume that the Cartesian bundle 2S3 is small. I should have put it in quotes. It's non-compact, but nevertheless. Then M theory is reduced to five-dimensional theory on Taub knot cross time. And link homology is the states of special particles or vibrations, depending on your view, which live on the cigars. So cigars vibrate, vibration is a particle, electromagnetic wave is a photon. So we count the states of those particles. That's what the link homology is. So the link is hidden here, and the particle, so the particle is one dimensional. It's a line in space-time, but there are two extra dimensions which are hidden in here. So in fact, these, if you think of vibrations as particles rather than as quantized waves, then these are special BPS particles, which are represented by M2 brains. So these are three-dimensional objects. It's one dimension in five, which means it's a world line of a particle, and two dimensions hidden in the Cartesian bundle. So our idea of counting the states of these particles is turn them into D2s by finding an appropriate U1, which rotates, which reduces 11 to 10. And then the crucial idea is to keep the resulting D2s close together. So they will form a stack of pancakes, you may say. And their vibrations, their different vibrations of that stack, result in different BPS particles. So counting BPS particles is the same as counting the vibrations of that stack. So when I was drawing a disk, that was the stack of those two of those D2s. So keep them close together, and their ends, their boundaries, sit partly on M5s or whatever happens to them, representing Chern-Simons, and partly on M5s, which represent the links. So instead of showing you the how this results in the disk, I'd rather show you a different picture, which will result in a strip instead of a disk. But it's very similar. It's the same technology, because that's the setup that appears in these lectures here. In most of these lectures related to quantum conditioning, some logic, and so on. So this is the story. The mathematical construction was done by Rina Anno, and the physical, I borrow the ideas from Mina with some modifications. So our M3 will not be S3, but it will be similar, a cylinder cross extra dimension, which is braid time. So this is where Mina starts her talks. This is the picture from her. The crosses mark the breakpoints. So as you move up here, these points start to move on the cylinder. So here is the Cartesian bundle to this M3. The Cartesian bundle to cylinder, you just cross it with a plane, with C. Mina here puts a torus. I think this is the torus of Kolya Dedushenko. But we use C here. And there is a braid time, a dual direction to the braid time. Now the M5s, the ones that give you Chern-Simons, they wrap the cylinder and the braid time. So I shifted them a little bit in the transverse direction. Pushing things off the zero section is a good thing to do. But generally, it's hard. But in this geometry, it's very easy. You just slide them along the dual time. And the M5s that give you the braid strands, they sit at a point here. So conormal to a point is just a C attached to that point. That's one part of them. And they run along the braid lines, so again, they're points in the transverse direction, in the Cartesian direction to the braid time. So you slide them a little bit more off the zero section. The zero section is the vertical axis. And you just slide them away. And M2s, the ones that will give us the BPS particles, they are stretched between them this way. So some end here, some end there, the multiplicity is jump down as you go across the lines. So the lines are interfaces. The green is the bulk. Now we compactify by U1 to get from M theory to 2A. The compactification rotates the cylinder C star. That's the one that we use. Mina does something different. So what do you get? C star turns into a line. The marked points is what remains of the braid points. The rest is the same. Now, since you lost the one of the directions in which the braiding happens, you should expect that the braiding will become mysterious. Because you do not see this circular, well, you do not see directly the direction, the circle direction of the cylinder. So for you now, these cross points move through each other, but for a mysterious reason, there is two ways to move one for the other. Plus, there is also an affine move, because you can go around the hole. Here, the cylinder has two holes. But the rest is the same. So now, instead of M2s, we have good old D2s, which will give us after a twist, they will give us a 3DB model. And these lines will become interfaces. So when you, the Chern-Simons will become D4s because they lost one dimension. They were wrapped on the cylinder. And the braid M5s will become NS5s because they were transverse to the circle. So they didn't lose a dimension. So you get a strip. On one side, you have the T star FLN object. And that's known since, should I quote Hanani Witten or Gayota Witten, that this is what the NS5s produce. So could have been predicted. The other one produces, here I should definitely quote Gayota Witten, the so-called equivariant Slodowy slice. It's another symplectic variety with the GLN action. So again, there is this, you see, extra. The extra coordinates form a symplectic variety, and this superpotential is their moment map paired with X. So that's because it comes from higher dimensions. And the category, if you cross this strip, will be we have to take critical points with respect to X, but as we know, it's the same as doing the joint Hamiltonian reduction of auxiliary varieties. So you will get an AN type Nakajima quiver variety this way. And the braid, which happens on this side, will result in functors between coherent sheaves on these varieties. So a fine braids will act on these sheaves, and this will lead us to link homology and even a bit more. Final comment: if you play Legendre game with these interfaces, so as to place them either on X or Y cigar, the classical Nakajima setup assumes that these are wrapped on one cigar and these are all wrapped on the other cigar. But now we can switch some, and this will result in Legendre. And so instead of the Nakajima variety, you will get something else, which is describable. And this something else is the variety which is associated to a weight space of the tensor product of SLN representations, same way as Nakajima is of superalgebra, same way as Nakajima is associated to ordinary algebra. So now you see how to generalize Nakajima to superalgebras and two types of fundamentals. We have a paper with Richard Remani where we tested this for GL11 and the R matrix, which depends on spectral parameter, and we got the right R matrix. So there was a test. Okay, I should stop here. I'm sorry, I'm over.
So Lev, one thing I had kind of wondered about, you sort of said this thing about adding the fundamental to the matter, killing the kind of affine guy going around that. But I think the affine guy going around that thing is like, under this like Bezrukhovnikov-Riesz picture, isn't that just like tensoring with a line bubble?
So another way of saying what the effect of framing is that it punctures the P1, which supports the line bundle, which is responsible for going around.
Okay.
So their P1s are coming from flags. So you do not see directly, but the P1, the smallest P1, the P1 which is responsible for this is punctured, and so trivializes that bundle. So you again, you in their story, instead of saying that they're line bundles, you can say that their flag variety is a quotient of the group by Borel, and so the line bundle becomes shifting by the Borel weight. This will bring it close to the way I presented it here. So P1 is punctured.
From the perspective of your matrix factorization category, do you understand how to go to other colors of the Lincoln variant? So like some symmetric power?
So the answer is, so first of all, if you want to get other fundamentals, meaning exterior powers of the normal square, all you have to do is take partial flags. That's very well known. If you want to use symmetric powers of the standard, then you have to use projectors, which is an interesting subject and meaningful and interesting and meaningful. And that's if you use the other type of square, in other words, instead of having nilpotent condition at that transition, you put a general respect of the flag, then using partial flag will give you symmetric powers. So now you can have a partial flag, big N, partial flags with huge gaps and it will be still compatible with the D4 site, which tells you what the group you have. Because the rule that there can be at most one D2 connecting NS5 and D5 is lifted. It holds only when one sits on one cigar and the other on the other cigar. If they sit on the same cigar, you can put many of them apparently in between. So in this way, you can accommodate easily high symmetric powers, but over the wrong square. But if you want the exterior powers of that new square, then you have to use projectors, and it's a little, you will have to use projectors. So that's the story. The envelopes are somewhere near here. The envelopes that Andre likes are part of the story, and they're very, very close.
I had a question. You had two ways of getting to SLN or SLN ecology. And one of them is on this slide. And the other one involved
the differential.
Differential to line operating. Do you understand why they're the same?
No. I thought a little bit, and they looked very different. So maybe I should think more, but they do look different. And moreover, here you also fix the weight of the in the tensor product. So this setup, the way the D2s end on the purple ones, tells you what is the weight in the tensor product. So the send ones tell you which representations are present, and the charges, and the charges of the purple ones tell you what is the group and what's the highest weight. So it's not easy. I don't see an easy. And besides, the calculation of the invariant is done differently in both cases. So in the old case, we close the braid circularly. So we take Holmes between two braids. If we do the same here, we will get an interesting invariant, which will be an invariant of a link closed inside S2 cross S1. And this, besides this S2, has two special unknots running around corresponding to Mina's holes in the cylinder.
So the 3D construction, like the sort of picture, even if we just took like this deformed conical, and then we need to do like a 3D setup with a big hole in the middle, right? With a sort of a wrapped boundary condition, and that seems to be what's.
I'm sorry, the hole in the middle. You mean what?
Like the theory would be supported on an annulus times time.
Yes, yes, yes.
It seems like the statement that's coming out of this is that when we shrink the central hole of that annulus to define a line operator, the line operator we get is equivalent to this thing deformed by a differential.
Yeah, you would think. I'm afraid that this is not how it works. I'm afraid that this is very much not how it works. Because again, the line would know, for example, the line would know about the weight, and the closure is done. I have that hope, but I'll be happy to discuss.
Any questions about line? Let's thank them again.